Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Obsessing over text messages. We all do it. But when you're dating, texting can also mean miscommunication, mixed signals, and drama. That's what Sandra Barron writes about in her essay, Are We Dating? Her piece is read by Kristen Ritter, who stars in the Netflix series Jessica Jones.
The orange message light on my cell phone started blinking as I was getting ready for bed. Barely an hour had passed since our quick kiss goodnight at the subway, and I was surprised to see the screen light up with the initials I'd just entered into my phone. It wasn't a voicemail. It was a text message. And it made me smile. You miss me? Wink face. I'd met him a week before at my usual Wednesday night hangout. He was alone, but gregarious, and he seemed to be pals with the female bartender. A tacit vote of confidence. He chatted with my friends and me, and then left with a wave from the door. When my friend Kate and I ordered our next round of drinks, the bartender said this round was on the guy we had just been talking to. Surprised? We debated his motivations. I insisted that perfectly normal people sometimes buy strangers drinks just to be nice. Kate thought he was way too aggressive. When I saw him at the bar the next Wednesday, I thanked him for the drink. He asked if he could take me to dinner sometime. I said I'd think about it. He walked me to the subway and we exchanged numbers, but I thought it would be days before I heard from him, if ever. Making this late-night text message all the more unexpected. I like text messages. They fill an ever-narrowing gap in modern communication tools, combining the immediacy of a phone call with the convenience of an answering machine message and the premeditation of email. And if they happen to be from a crush and pop up late at night, they have the giddy rereadability of a note left on a pillow. So, did I miss him? Certainly not. But I was flying from New York to West Virginia in the morning for work. Maybe I'd miss him while I was away. I could already hear my friends citing his enthusiasm as evidence he was coming on too strong, but I'd had enough of aloof. I found his boldness refreshing. Before I turned out the light and snapped the phone into its charger, I allowed myself one more grin at his message and a grimace at his middle school style you and a winking smiley face. Then I deleted it. He called the next afternoon while I was grounded in Pittsburgh between flights. He kept me company while I ambled down moving walkways and wandered through a loop of food courts. We talked about work for the first time. He said he worked intense hours as a freelancer so he could take off months at a time to travel. And he showed he had been paying attention by asking me things that we had discussed at the bar. He asked if we could have dinner when I got back to town, and I said sure. A few hours later, as the prop plane taxied toward the gate in West Virginia, I turned on my phone and an animated lighthouse beacon indicated that it was searching for a signal. For 3 days, the light swept the dark cartoon sea in vain. Every time I saw no signal on the screen, I felt unmoored and isolated. but as soon as the signal bars sprang to life on my trip home on Monday, that orange light flashed on, and sure enough, it was him. Miss me now? I'd missed having cell phone service. And my mind had indeed wandered at times to our airport conversation, but that degree of nuance was too much for a 12-button keypad, so I wrote, "Hi, sure, talk when I get back." This set off a volley of texts. Where did I live? What day is good? What about tonight? Tomorrow? We decided on dinner that Thursday, and I finally signed off, thumb sore and eyes tired. At the office on Tuesday, as the light blinked on again, din in Soho, then drinks in the Evil, and maybe a kiss. I wondered, just who is this guy? Google failed me. One time, armed with only a guy's first name and the fact that he sold sneakers, I had found his full details and photos online. But all I had here was a cell phone number and initials. And the entire digital detective squad of the modern dater were stumped. I would actually have to learn about him the old-fashioned way in person. Which is partly why, on a slushy, windy Wednesday afternoon, I liked his next message. Dinner at Raoul's tomorrow. I just made reservations for 7:30. I couldn't remember the last time I'd gone out with someone who'd made reservations. Sounds good, I replied. A message came back as I was leaving the office. It's better than good. You are with me. Maybe I'll stop by the bar tonight. So he remembered I usually went on Wednesdays. On the way over, feet soaked and fingers numb, I knew that I didn't want him to brave the sleet just to see me. Especially since it would be awkward, trying to get to know him better while hanging out with people he had never met. And after all, we had reservations for the next night. "Don't come out in this weather," I wrote. "Can't really hang out anyway. See you tomorrow." His reply was impossibly swift for its length. I live 45 seconds from there and I would be doing my own thing. I am not leechy. Very independent boy I am. I may or may not depends where the wind takes me. Was it just me, or had things just taken a hairpin turn for the hostile? My message was meant to be friendly. Had it come out that way? Or was I reading him wrong? I needed to find a way to respond that was light, in case I was only imagining he was angry, but not flippant, in case he actually was. I swallowed my distaste for cutesy abbreviations and tried LOL! Exclamation point. As you like, then. Smile. I cringed slightly as I hit send. This suddenly seemed like a dangerously clumsy way of communicating. Minutes later. Would you like me to stay away? Oh, dear. At this point, yes. Wires were crossing that would probably be best untangled in person the next day. Entering the bar, I waved to my friends in their booth and, before joining them, whipped off a quick response attempting to be polite and clear. "Yeah, I guess that'd be better. You'd distract me if you were here." A minute later, after I'd settled in with my friends, the orange light looked like a warning. "Too late. I'm here." I looked up. Sure enough, there he was, talking to two girls at the bar. He drifted closer and hovered nearby, but didn't make eye contact. By the time he came over and sat down, a full hour had passed. He'd clearly had a few drinks, and our conversation went downhill as fast as it had on our phone screens. He said that I'd tried to control him by saying he shouldn't come to the bar, and added that he hadn't come to see me, but to see other people. After going on in this vein for a while, he suddenly softened and asked me to promise one thing, a kiss before the night was over. I stammered that I couldn't make any promises. He shook his head and stormed off, sloshing the beers on the table and sending a pool cue clattering to the floor. Before I could process what had happened, he looked over from his perch on a nearby bar stool and smiled, winked, and waved over his shoulder as if we'd never met. My friends, wide-eyed, asked what was going on. I wasn't sure. But I did know one thing. Reservations or not, tomorrow's date was off. Not so that evil blinking light. Only half an hour later, with both of us still in the bar. No, was it possible? Another message? What was all that about? He'd written. Are we still on for tomorrow? I deleted the message and put my phone away, hoping to erase the whole encounter. Soon, he seemed to have left. And as long as my phone stayed in the dark recesses of my purse, I believed that he was powerless to bother me. But suddenly, there he was again, standing a few feet from our booth, smiling and crooking his finger at me. I shook my head. I need to talk to you, he said. I told him we had nothing to talk about. Turns out I wasn't the only one who found him menacing. Within minutes, the bartender took the stocky wine glass out of his hand and told him to leave. I hoped he would be so embarrassed that he wouldn't dream of contacting me again. But the next morning, the blinking orange light seemed louder than my bleeding alarm clock. 3 new messages, mailbox full, from 6:30 a.m. I am done boozing for a while, wink. From 6:38 a.m. What did I do to upset you? Do you not want to have dinner? At 6:45, as if he had waited long enough for a reply. Anyway, too bad. I would have liked to have gotten to know you better. I liked the finality of that one. But had he really given up? Or was there simply no more room in the inbox? I deleted those 3 and got on the subway. I emerged to find, please forgive me and join me for dinner, winking sad face. We are not going out, I wrote. What did I do? I'm at work and we are not discussing this. Whatever, he wrote. You don't have to be ignorant. Peace. I turned off the phone, dumbfounded. How had this happened? How had we managed to speed through all the stages of an actual relationship almost solely via text message? I'd gone from butterflies to doubt to anger at his name on the screen before we even knew each other. That was it, I decided. No more text message flirtations for me. From now on, I'd stick to more old-fashioned ways of getting to know a guy. Like email.
That's Kristen Ritter reading Sandra Barron's piece, Are We Dating? We'll catch up with Sandra after the break.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
So, what happened to Sandra Barron's resolution to stop mixing texting and dating?
Yeah, never say never.
She met her husband, Jim, about a year after her piece came out.
It was a long-distance relationship that played out almost entirely by text message. My husband was basically the wingman on a blind date that some mutual journalist friends had hooked me up on. It was immediately clear that I wasn't interested in the guy that my friend was trying to set me up with. And I didn't think much would come of it with Jim because he lived on the other side of the country. And I thought he was nice and cool and funny. And I thought, well, if we stay in touch, that's great. If not, that's what it is. But texting really kept us in this constant, easy, low-level conversation. And I think if it hadn't been for texting in this case, our relationship could have just as easily faded away, given the distance.
Sandra says that texting felt different when she was getting to know her husband. Normal, rather than fraught and anxious. And when she looks back on her brief pseudo-relationship with the man she wrote about...
I do cringe a little bit. I have that sense on the one hand of, okay, I was looking for something and I didn't want to overlook a chance to find it. And on the other hand, I think, oh, okay, there were red flags there that I clearly missed. But at the same time, I have so much empathy for myself at that time, just hoping that things would be better than they looked, wanting to find the positive take on a situation. Just being optimistic, really.
Sandra's piece came out in 2005, and she says that she used to wonder if it's outdated.
And then I kind of thought about it again and thought, you know, our phones have changed so much. We've gone from this little monochromatic screen and a keypad to these incredibly powerful computers in our pockets. And yet some of the fundamental aspects of it have hardly changed at all. I think the speed has changed, maybe the volume has changed, but we're still trying to build something on a foundation of much less information than we would want to have. You know, we can send photos, we can send videos, but we still end up trying to figure out what the other person means and trying to say things the right way. Just trying to connect.
That's Sandra Barron. She lives with her husband in Los Angeles. After the break, Daniel Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times, and more from Kristen Ritter.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Dan Jones says that Sandra's story was one of the first about texting and relationships that he ever received.
And it was novel that an entire relationship could take place through texting and through the sort of mismatched emotions and the misread emotions from online communication. And on the other hand, this story happens all the time today. But this, to me, you know, really provides insight into relationships today and how something can seem aggressive in a text. Emotions can be revealed that you don't really intend, and things can get kind of supercharged because you're not in person and you don't have that in-person read of body language and innuendo and that in-person flirtation that's so important.
And here's Kristen Ritter.
Oh, well, unfortunately, I connected with this one because we all have terrible miscommunications that happen over text message almost daily with new people, old relationships, work people. So I found this essay funny and very relatable.
Thanks again to Kristen for reading this week's piece. She starred in Breaking Bad and Veronica Mars, and you can see her now in Jessica Jones, which just released its second season on Netflix. Next week, Jeffrey Boyer Chapman.
The day Jeffrey was born, I celebrated by handing out blue lollipops to my classmates. Although the brown and purple ball of flesh I visited at Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn was not exactly what I had pictured, I looked forward to being his protective older brother until he was old enough to become my best friend. As my father and uncles smoked cigars in our house the night before my mother and Jeff came home, I huffily sprayed Lysol.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, Caitlin O'Keefe, and Amory Sievertson. Additional sound design by Matt Reed. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.